a Birdificer creation.
Welcome to episode 143 of the Let's Talk Apple podcast. I'm your host, Bart Buschatz, and this is the show for July 2025. It may be the silly season, given that we're in the middle of summer, but we still have quite a bit of Apple news to talk about, so let's get stuck in. As usual, let's kick off with some updates and follow-ups to stories from recent shows or just stories we've been following for a while. We are going to get the Apple v Epic bit out of the way quickly because there is really only one notable update. Apple have filed some new paperwork citing a rather interesting US Supreme Court ruling which lifted an injunction stopping President Trump from breaking the US Constitution by ignoring birthright citizenship. The Supreme Court basically said lower court judges can't just block the president from violating the Constitution everywhere. Each citizen being illegally deported on little or no notice would need to file their own case rather than one judgment blocking illegal breaking of the Constitution everywhere. So Apple looked at that and went, that's interesting. We have one judge forcing us to allow all developers in the United States to not do the whole anti-Siri thing, i.e. to link out to third-party payment systems. Well, they didn't all file a court case independently, so if the president can only be stopped breaking the Constitution one case at a time, can't we only be stopped breaking antitrust law one developer at a time? Maybe this whole injunction should go away? That's their logic. But it all seems a teeny tiny bit messed up to me, looking at it from the outside in. I mean, arguing about how to stop the president breaking the Constitution seems a little bit odd. Making it as difficult as possible to stop the president breaking the Constitution is a little bit odd. And then extending that logic to allowing companies to flout the law, unless you stop them one by one, is also a little bit odd. But hey, Apple are having a go. They're certainly paid for some good lawyers. In some loosely related news, Google are also being sued by Epic to try get their App Store situation opened up in the same way Apple's is. That's not going so good for them. They've lost their appeal, so it looks like Android is heading iOS's way very shortly in the United States. Okay, that's out of the way, thank goodness. So let us move on to some better news. On the opposite side of my little island here in Ireland, we have the United Kingdom. And we have had, well, basically there's a secret case using a secret court to try force Apple to put a back door into iCloud Advanced Data Protection. And we don't know anything official because we don't even officially know the case exists. So we learned about it through a leak reported by the Financial Times. And now we have another leak also reported by the Financial Times saying that the government are trying to find a face-saving climb down. So it looks like that potential drama is about to diffuse itself as the government tried to get the egg off their face. Part of me would like to see the egg stay in place, but hey, let's just get the problem to go away. That'd be nice. Speaking of nice, one of the things I love about Apple is their focus on accessibility. And while I usually think of accessibility in terms of software, they also do it for their hardware. And one of those things is that you can use AirPods Pro as hearing aids. But that's a medical feature, so it has to be approved country by country, while a whole bunch more countries have given the needed approval. So either with the previous or the next iOS update, can't remember which, the following very long list of countries is going to get the hearing aid feature. Argentina, Ecuador, Honduras, Indonesia, Israel, Kazakhstan, Moldova, the Palestinian territories, Serbia, Taiwan, Thailand, Ukraine, and Vietnam. If you're wondering about that mention of Palestine there, basically, officially on paper, Israel is running the Palestinian territories. So I think the Palestinian territories don't really have a government at the moment or a standing country, having been sort of bomb back into the Stone Age, anyone there who can find food can also get their hearing aid features? Okay. Yeah, anyway, let's not go down that rabbit hole. Ugh, don't want to do that in this show. Enough bad news as it is. Right, okay, now, this next bit comes with a little health warning. It is fun to play with beta versions of Apple's operating systems, and the very, very early, really, really, really buggy versions of Apple's operating systems are only available as developer betas, so you need to be in the developer program to get them, and then later in the process, when they're still buggy rather than extremely buggy, there are the first public betas. Well, we have arrived at that stage for the the StarOS 26 release cycle, so you can, if and only if, you have devices that you do not need to get actual work done, start playing around with Tahoe iOS 26, iPadOS 26, WatchOS 26, tvOS 26, and HomePod Software 26. In terms of our regulatory rundown, let us start in the European Union. Apple's battle with the European Commission over the DMA, the Digital Markets Act, certainly rumbled on in July. The month started very much on script. Apple had said, we're going to formally appeal, and they formally appealed. Basically, I will give you the quote they gave to Daring Fireball and a number of other media outlets. Today, we filed our appeal because we believe the European Commission's decision and their unprecedented fine go far beyond what the law requires. As our appeal will show, the EC, European Commission, is mandating how we run our store and forcing business terms which are confusing for developers and bad for users. We implemented this to avoid punitive daily fines and will share the facts with the court. Basically, we are very begrudgingly doing what we were told because we can't afford to pay gigantic fines forever, even though we're Apple, but they can't forever. And they're basically saying that the commission is going beyond the law. Now, given how much wrangling there was between the commission and the politicians, the commission wanting more power as the law was being drafted and the politicians refusing to give it to them, kind of an interesting little dynamic going on here. So it will be interesting to see what comes out of this court case sometime in the next 50 years. Okay, I'm being slightly facetious, but it is going to be a while. You're talking 2 or 3 years anyway. So for now, at least, Apple have done what they promised. They filed the paperwork and they're saying that the commission is overstepping the law. They're also saying that it's gotten really confusing for developers, and they're certainly not wrong about that. As for bad for users, I'm not sure I agree with that, but that's another matter. Now, that's the firm facts for what went on this month. But we also have, again, from our friends at the Financial Times, some very credible reporting that there's been a change of tone between Apple and the Commission. One of the things Apple was complaining about very loudly in June was that they kept on trying to work with the Commission, and the Commission kept on ghosting them, basically. And it made the Commission look pretty darn bad, to be honest. I'm fairly sure I gave them a fairly good piece of my mind in last month's show for not actually engaging with Apple and just issuing giant big fines and basically grandstanding. It would appear that is no longer happening. It's certainly been awfully quiet on that front. So Apple did file their court case at the very, very, very start of the month. But since then, bub guess. And the Financial Times tell us that the reason it's so quiet is that actually, at long last, Apple and the Commission are engaging with each other. And apparently there will be a few more tweaks to the rules, and then that might just be the end of that until that court case Apple filed gets, you know, to court. Because, of course, Apple will do what they do need to do to stop the current ongoing fines, but they really do want the whole thing overturned by the court at the earliest possible opportunity. So no matter what they negotiate with the commission, Apple are going to ask the court to review the whole kit and caboodle. Meanwhile, the Dutch antitrust watchdog, who we talked about imposing fines at long last for the App Store dating apps thing that started in the Netherlands oh so long ago, they have decided to pause what they're doing while they wait for the Commission and Apple to negotiate, which is pretty good confirmation on the Financial Times story. If a major national antitrust body say, no, 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 we'll wait for those negotiations going on with Apple and the Commission. Well, okay, I think that's official. Meanwhile, the Spanish are not waiting. They have let it be known that they are expanding their ongoing App Store antitrust probe to include an examination of pricing. And now, there may be some translation issues going on, given that all of these court cases are obviously happening in Spanish, and I do not speak Spanish. I'm relying on translations, and we may have translation. I'm relying on summaries of translations, which is never good. But as best as I can tell, I don't get it. I don't get what it is they think Apple are doing wrong. Because Apple really do allow developers to set prices very much of their own choosing in very, very, very broad bounds these days. Like, very broad compared to the early App Store. So, not really sure what they're driving at, but okay, they're expanding their probe. Doesn't mean they've decided it's wrong, but they're going to have a good look at it. So, we shall see. And finally, I want to end on a little bit of good news because it's so rare. Lots and lots and lots of companies are obviously caught up in European regulations. And one of those American companies also dealing with the Commission to come to arrangements is a different monopolist in the European Commission's eyes in a very, very different industry, Corning Glass. They pretty much have the market cornered on Gorilla Glass style glass, which is very, very important to makers of glass fronted and backed phones like Apple. The good news for Apple is that the negotiated changes, again, that was all quiet without lots of shoutiness. They basically came to an agreement and went, okay, that's done. So Corning have agreed to make some changes. The Commission are happy. And the good news from Apple's point of view is that Apple's existing relationship with Corning is not affected by what Corning agreed with the European Commission. And then on a very related note on the Brexit side of the channel, the UK have published their plans to regulate Apple and Google under their, I can't believe it's not the DMA really, Digital Markets Competition and Consumers Act. They haven't put anything into effect yet. They have opened their proposals to public comment and expect to finalise them by the 22nd of October this year. They propose designating both Apple and Google as having, quote, strategic market power. To follow the Act's words, this is the equivalent of being designated a gatekeeper under the DMA. And despite that designation, which you would assume would mean that the equivalent of the European Commission in the UK, which in this case is the Consumer and Markets Authority, that's who the law says does the Commission's job in the DMA, they don't actually plan to do anything. Their plan that they're now putting up for public comment is to, quote, monitor Apple and Google's behaviour for up to 5 years, but they're considering mandating sideloading and or third-party app stores. That is, compared to what's going on in Europe, very weak sauce. But Apple are not happy. They let it be known that they were cranky about that. Epic Games, though, are really not happy. Basically, the Mac Observer headline says it pretty well. Fortnite's comeback in the UK uncertain as CMA delays action on Apple. Jumping back across the pond to the United States, the Department of Justice's antitrust case against Apple moved forward a little bit, with Apple officially filing their response to the DOJ's complaint. They basically break down every one of the DOJ's 236 paragraphs point by point, and I do use the term breakdown considerately. The summary of what Apple are saying is the DOJ is just wrong. If you're looking for a detailed summary, they have it over 9to5 Mac, but basically, every point the DOJ makes, it's knocked down by Apple. And as I read it, I'm very much thinking, yeah, I think the DOJ have, or sorry, I think Apple have a point here. So, again, the 9to5 summary is excellent. So, the big points they highlight is that the DOJ says Apple stifles the success of super apps, despite the fact that Apple allows such apps. and indeed a multitude of super apps to exist in the store today. So if they don't allow it, how are they there? Because they are there. The DOJ says Apple blocks cloud streaming, and that was true some time ago, but it isn't true anymore. So again, why is that in the court case? The DOJ says Apple degrades third-party messaging apps, even though they're not only widely available, but extremely popular. Here in Europe, that little green WhatsApp icon is way more popular than Apple's own icon. Way more. Telegram is thriving, unfortunately, for security reasons. Signal's doing pretty well. For anyone who's heard of Signal, these things are all on the iPhone. The iPhone integrates very well. The APIs are fantastic. It's just as good as any other messaging system. I don't get it. But hey, like I say, Apple are just tearing this down. The DOJ says Apple links the functionality of third-party smartwatches, even though they can effectively pair with iPhone, share data to and from the iPhone via a companion app, and take advantage of certain functionalities Apple has developed, which are expanding over time. If there's a valid point anywhere, it's probably there. But even there, Apple have actually done quite a lot to address this over time. So I think they have a point, the DOJ that is, but it's not as strong as it was 5 years ago. Anyway. And then finally, the DOJ says Apple withholds access to iPhone hardware necessary for third-party digital wallets to use Tap to Pay. Again, that's something that Apple has been providing new APIs for, and they also have the counter-argument that we're protecting people's money here, folks. There may be a slight point here, and certainly in Europe, changes have been forced by the European Commission. So on those last two points, I don't think it's a slam dunk for Apple, but the first three make the DOJ look really stupid. I've been saying that since this case was filed. It's like, well, you sort of forgot to take into account recent history here and just file the case anyway, which makes you look very silly in my opinion. So anyway, there we are. That is where things stand with the Department of Justice case. Moving then all the way to the other side of the Pacific Ocean, Japan is also moving forward with its new laws. So it's been a little difficult to cover this because, while I might pick up the odd phrase of Spanish, because it's a romance language, I really don't speak any Japanese whatsoever, apart from a few catchphrases I've heard in films. So it's been difficult for me to report on this. But anyway, Japan have been working hard for quite a few years to put together their own regulations. And Japan's Fair Trade Commission has just published their plans to actually implement the company's new Mobile Software Competition Act, which they passed earlier this year. And basically, as best as I can tell from the summaries of the translations, third-party app stores and outside payments are going to be coming in Japan, similar to how they are in Europe and America. Certainly outside payments in Europe and America, and third-party app stores like in Europe, I think, is what's on the menu there. And then finally, one to put a pin in for later in the year, the US ITC, International Trade Commission, has made a ruling that affects Apple but wasn't against Apple. Basically, one of the OLED suppliers in Apple's iPhone supply chain has been basically blocked, or has an initial finding has proposed blocking their displays from import into the US. It is only a preliminary ruling now, but it's expected to become a final ruling in November. And if nothing changes, that in November, Apple will have a problem in that one of their OLED suppliers will not be allowed into the United States. Now, I've already heard speculation that Apple can just juggle about their supply so that the phones built for the United States can use the other supplier's screens, and maybe it'll be all okay. But it's still a headache Apple could probably do without. Their supply chain is undergoing quite enough of a reshuffle as it is. I really don't think they want another problem. But anyway, that is, by the looks of things, on the horizon for the end of this year. Moving very slightly sideways, let us move on to legal latest. Apple versus Masimo. This is about blood oxygen monitoring in Apple Watches in the United States. That case actually went to an oral hearing in a physical courtroom. Apple argued that the ban should never have been issued because Masimo's supposedly harmed product, that didn't exist when the import block was put in place. Massimo were like, yeah, but it was a prototype. We were working on it. You were harming the work we were doing. So Apple's argument is, yeah, but you didn't actually have a thing. You were just fixing up to make a plan to have a thing. And Massimo were like, yeah, the law doesn't really explicitly say that. And it takes a lot of work, you know, to turn a prototype into a product. So the fact that we were still doing that bit doesn't mean we weren't harmed. We shall see what the judge decides on that. But they're the two arguments being made. Then a little bit of good news for Apple. There was a lawsuit claiming that iOS 13 ignored users' data settings. Basically, someone tried to argue that it was deceptive that when you upgraded from the free plan to a different plan with very specified amounts of data you were buying for your money, that that was deceptive because you didn't get to keep your free plan too, even though it was called an upgrade rather than an addition. Yeah, the judge basically took one look and went, this is nonsense, go away. So away it went. And then the last legal story is an interesting one because at first glance it looks like Apple overreacting and perhaps shooting themselves in the foot a little. The Apple are suing John Prosser, who is a YouTuber who leaked the liquid glass design a few months before WWDC and has been shown to be pretty darn accurate. It really was a leak. It wasn't a guess. It was a genuine leak. Apple are suing him because they have presented evidence in their court filings to say that he paid for an Apple employee to leak that to him, which would, there's a legal line between journalists are permitted to publish leaks given to them freely, hence things like the Pentagon Papers, you know, some really big stuff has come out that way. It is a gigantic, massive legal red line to induce someone to break the law for you. That's Julian Assange got himself into potential trouble that way. And Apple claimed that Prosser incentivized, in fact, a friend of an Apple employee to steal the Apple employee's phone and do a screen share with Prosser to let him capture the video, which he then recreated so as not to use the original video, but to prove that he had real data, he shared that video with news outlets so they wouldn't say he was faking it, and those made a pact to Apple along with some tips to say, we know how this got out. And anyway, that's all in Apple's filing. Well, a lot of that is in Apple's filing and some of its subsequent reporting. Prosser has said, no, Apple don't quite have the facts right, and didn't really elaborate. Look, we don't know what will happen as the court case develops. There will be discovery. There will be more evidence presented. It's just an allegation and a counter claim of no. But it certainly looks like Prosser across the line from what is journalistically fine to what is very, very, very much not fine. We shall see. Apple HR and acquisition news has been quite a quiet segment of the show in recent months, not so this month. Before we get into the giant big mega story in this section this month, let us quickly check in with the National Labor Relations Board, the NLRB, in the United States. They had ruled that Apple was engaging in illegal union busting in one of their New York City stores. Apple appealed, and that appeal has now gone Apple's way. And you know something? Reading what Apple presented in their defense, it sounds reasonable. Maybe that's some spin and it's not an accurate reflection. But my read of, you know, it's my default reaction is to be pro, you know, pro-labor, anti-giant big company. Look, it's no secret that's my default, but I do my best to, you know, to be honest and fair. And reading Apple's responses, I think Apple have a point. I think Apple may have been unfairly judged here. Either way, they have won in the NLRB, so that's a small win for Apple in their ongoing fight against unionization in the United States. Now, the big news, as promised. Apple COO, Chief Operating Officer, Jeff Williams, retiring later in 2025, replaced by Senior VP Sahib Khan. That is the headline Apple Insider put in it. There was a detailed Apple press release as well. Jeff Williams has been with Apple for an extremely long time. He was Tim Cook's number two when Tim Cook was Apple's previous chief operating officer. And when Tim went up to the top job, he promoted his number two to become the new COO. And Jeff Williams's number two, Jeff Williams's new Jeff Williams was Sahib Khan, who's basically been learning from Williams, who learned from Cook. And now Khan is going to go up to the COO role. So an interesting example of succession working well here. This is going to be a two-step retirement process. So Williams has already left the chief operating officer role at the end of July as we record this. So Sahib Khan is the COO. But Williams was also, since Johnny Ives' departure, effectively the person the design team reported to. And he's going to continue in that role until he retires from Apple completely, quote, later this year. When Jeff Williams fully leaves Apple, the design team leadership is going to start reporting to Tim Cook directly. So there is still, after all of these years, no sign of anyone replacing the Johnny Ive role. Because the way it's been described is that Jeff Williams oversaw what was going on in design. He wasn't proactively engaging in it. He wasn't leading it. He was just overseeing it. And given his expertise and his skills, that seems like the right thing for him to do. And Tim Cook is also going to be an overseer because Tim Cook, too, doesn't have the skills to actually lead a design team. All he can do is oversee one. I am concerned that Apple have not gotten their design team back into a decent state since Ive retired and took most of his best people with him to Love From. We shall see. I mean, it's not as if Apple have completely messed up. But I also feel Apple are beginning to suffer a little bit from not having either a Steve Jobs or a Johnny Ive style final say at the top, sort of giving a sensible final vision and, most importantly of all, saying no a lot. Having someone very, very powerful known for saying no really keeps everyone on their toes and really makes sure that what comes out is proper polished. And I mean, they're not, Apple are still better than everyone else, but they used to be lots better than everyone else, and now they're just better than everyone else. And they can probably coast for another while. But really, we do, I think, need an actual design visionary actually leading the design team, not just overseeing it. I'm not the only one who thinks that. John Gruber also thinks that and has given a much more coherent argument for that point of view. Also linked in the show notes is an Apple Insider story that sort of takes a big picture look at all of the exec reshuffling going on within Apple and just what it means to have someone as important as Jeff Williams leave. So both of those are linked in the show notes at letstalk.ie. And finally, before moving on to the main stories, let us quickly check in on Apple's services and original content. Apple Music has revealed the top 500 streamed songs ever to mark the 10th anniversary of Apple Music. It's kind of fun to look back and see over time which of the hits from the last decade were really the biggest hits. It's quite an eclectic mix. I kind of enjoyed having a little scroll through that. Been a pretty decent month for Apple Arcade. No sign that Apple are letting up on that. We have the usual list of releases, and I wasn't going to put them in the show notes, but there's another story, so hey, in they went anyway. What kind of caught my eye is that my beloved Worms franchise appears with a Worms-themed game coming in round about now-ish, in fact, in early August, so I'm looking forward to that. But also another big name there is a Play-Doh game. And I wouldn't have put that story on its own in the show notes because at this stage, we get press releases every single month telling us that there's new games coming to Apple Arcade. It used to be like noteworthy that Apple had resumed a good cadence of releases. Well, they've now been having a good cadence of releases for a year or two, so it's not news by itself, and I won't be talking about it every month anymore. But this month I am putting that cadence story in because also Apple are getting creative. Apple is bringing SpongeBob SquarePants crossovers to Apple Arcade. So SpongeBob is going to make a guest appearance in other games, including Snake.io and Crossy Road Castle. It's kind of an interesting... Apple also went to the effort of putting in a press release about it, so they're taking it seriously. It's nice to see Apple Arcade get it, this kind of, not just the cadence, which is great, but actually a little bit of creative marketing as well. And hey, who doesn't love a bit of SpongeBob SquarePants? So good call, Apple, I guess. Moving over to Apple TV Plus land, I've stopped reporting on the vast majority of nominations for awards that Apple gets long ago, because this is not a media show, this is not an entertainment show, and I'm really not the person to talk about these things in a skilled and informed way. But it is worth noting that the nominations for the Emmys came out, and the Emmys are not exactly a small thing. And, well, the headline from Apple Insider rather says it: Severance dominates 2025 Emmy Awards nomination list. 27 nominations for Severance, including the big ones like male and female lead. Apple PR summed it up with: Apple also lands the most acting nominations of any network or studio this year, with 31 performance nods total. You know, that is noteworthy. So noted it is. Also noteworthy is that Apple's F1 movie really is working out well for them. They have set a box office record for Apple's products, for Apple's movies, $509 million globally in terms of box office revenue. That's pretty darn good. $500 million is a lot of money, even for Apple. Meanwhile, they're also continuing their sports stuff. They had a big press release at the end of the month saying that the crossover league, so this is an interesting idea, it's actually teams from Mexico and the United... Soccer, by the way, I should say soccer. Soccer teams from Mexico and the United States of America play in a single league, a crossover league. So, as Apple Insider put it, MLS and Liga MX Face-Off League Cup 2025 is appearing exclusively on Apple TV. Now, I understand why a few days earlier, with much less fanfare, Apple let it be known that their sports app is coming to Mexico. Also not really related that the UK's FA Cup is going to have their live scores appearing in the sports app, which if you're into soccer, that's kind of the big one. Well, the Premier League, FA Cup, they're both big ones, right? But it seems very appropriate that the app would be available in Mexico if a few days later you're going to announce that you are the place to go watch this major big transnational face-off league. So yeah, that all makes sense. Also, Apple Wallet continues to roll out. If you are living in South Korea, you can now ride South Korean transit with Apple Money and T-Money together. So you can basically put all that in your wallet and tap to pay to go across the transit network. Sounds useful. And finally, Apple News Plus Audio arrives in the UK, Canada and Australia. So they have had Apple News Plus, but not the audio content, and now they do. I just want to say, dear Apple, any chance of Apple News Plus rolling out itself to more countries, like, say, the little Emerald Isle over here from where I'm talking to you? Anyway, so far, Apple News Plus remains extremely exclusive. I know Americans think, oh, that's old news, that's been around forever. Yeah, for you, a lot of us are still waiting 5 years on. Okay, right, enough of that. That is a summary of the most important stuff in terms of Apple services and original content in July 2025. We have three main stories. We're going to start with Apple's Q3 2025 earnings call. Then we're going to move across to Apple's continuing efforts to address their rather embarrassing failure to deliver on their biggest AI promises. And then we're going to wrap things up with the launch of a new subscription service, AppleCare One. Main story number one, the earnings call. Now, I don't normally look forward to earnings calls, but you know something, with all of the tariff stuff going on and all the supply chain chaos, I really did actually want to figure out what was going on here. As per usual, the show notes have the transcript of everything Tim said from Six Colors, the fantastic charts post from Six Colors. But I'm just going to, rather than digging into the detail of the actual learnings, I'm just going to give you the headlines of what we learned. And then I want to dig into the one obvious little bit of implication here, which is tariffs. So, summing up the earnings call, we get headlines like Apple's $94 billion Q3 soundly beats Wall Street thanks to iPhone in China growth. Apple shatters expectations with 10% revenue surge. So that first headline was Apple Insider. The second one is Cult of Mac. Apple's Q3 2025 cash dividend is up in spite of growing tariff concerns. Also Apple Insider, a little hint of where we're about to head for most of this conversation. But before we go there, Tim Cook has said we spent on AI companies in the quarter. Nobody big, but we did invest in AI, and he did also put some colour on that, saying that Apple are going to be doing more of that kind of thing. And a nice little tidbit is that Apple's have sold their 3 billionth iPhone since 2007 in the previous quarter. That is billion with a B. Now, obviously, they haven't sold iPhones to 3 billion human beings, but they have sold 3 billion iPhones, which is pretty darn cool. I have bought many of those iPhones, so I know it's not, you know, 3 billion humans, because I'm accounting for, just at this stage, it might be 10 of them. Anyway, another somewhat related story to the earnings call that I just want to get out of the way before we dive into the tariff question. The somewhat Orwellianly named One Big Beautiful Bill. It's certainly big. Not entirely sure it's beauty, but hey, that's me letting my views shine through there. Ignore that. From an Apple point of view, there is a point worth noting, as Apple Insider do, that the bill changes how corporations can write off tax for their US-based R&D spending. And if Apple is already and plans to continue spending big on AI, well, it's rather convenient to get some better tax advantages for doing so. So that's of note. And that then brings us to the tariff aspects of this earnings call. So a summary would be that Apple is staring down $2 billion in total tariff costs before the end of September. That's how Apple Insider sum it up. If we dig a little bit deeper, Apple had estimated that their extra costs for the currently reported on quarter, so Q3, would be $900 million, so 0.9 of a billion. But they were only $800 million, which is 0.8 of a billion. Apple are now estimating a cost of $1.1 billion for the next quarter, and they go out of their way to stress that this is assuming nothing changes. Which isn't a great assumption, really, is it? But what else can Apple do? They can't guess what the Trump administration will do next. That would be a fool's errand. So the best they can do is project forward from what they know now, and if they do that, they think they'll end up at about $1.1 billion. So $1.1 billion plus $800 million, a little bit of rounding, ta-da, $2 billion in total cost before the end of September. That's how we get to that number. But that is a good hook to hang a little update on what else has been going on in terms of tariff land here. So more and more trade deals are moving forward. The president announces agreements in principle as done deals. Under the hood, those agreements in principle that get the shiny big press release are the starting point of actual negotiations where actual laws get drafted, and the whole thing takes ages and ages and ages. But it does, you know, it's a sign of more certainty, because those negotiations could break down. The president could just change his mind on a whim. Let's face it, he's done that a few times. But it's less uncertain than it is before. You have this kind of a agreement in principle, loose, a deal to make a deal. Yeah, let's call them deals to make deals. That's a good summary of the things being announced at the moment as tariff deals. They're not tariff deals, but they are deals to make deals. And as we get more and more certainty, I don't like saying that, that feels wrong. We can't have certainty because there isn't anything certain at the moment. As the uncertainty reduces, it is going to become a little bit clearer exactly how the new landscape is going to settle down. Apple have already been moving production around wildly to try work around the rapidly changing tariffs, with production slewing left and right to India and to other places. And I think, as is looking at the moment, China is still going to end up taking the brunt of these. So getting stuff out of China is going to be an Apple's advantage. But exactly where the balance of tariffs is going to land between China, between India and Vietnam, or India and South Korea and stuff, that isn't quite settled in, but we're getting to the stage with that settled in. So I would expect to see a little bit more jiggling around. It's very difficult to give a current accurate overview of where we stand, because where we stand is on shaky ground. But there's a link in the show notes to an Apple Insider story that I think does a pretty good job of summing up where we are now. One thing we are seeing out of all of this juggling around is a notable datum. It's actually a report, but because Apple don't make any of this stuff official, but it's an interesting report and it's credible. One of the effects of all of this jiggling around of where things get made is that for the first time ever, China is not going to be the exclusive launch provider for the iPhone 7. So generally speaking, what happens is Chinese manufacturing does the launch day iPhones, and then later, when the manufacturing process is bedded in, other manufacturing plants in other countries, like in India and so forth, they take the learnings from China and start applying them, and then the production expands to more countries. But on launch day, it's always been exclusively Chinese-made phones. That is not apparently going to happen for the iPhone 17. It's going to be simultaneously spun up as first runs in India and China, which of course helps Apple to not have Chinese phones going to their US customers, because otherwise they wouldn't be able to give any iPhones 17 on launch day without paying stupendous Chinese tariffs. And as bad as the Indian tariffs are looking, they're not going to be as bad as the Chinese ones. So that's noticeable. That's a really big change. Closer to home then, Apple is investing $500 million, or $500 million, in a US company called MP Materials. And they caught my eye because they are a rare earth magnet provider. So rare earths are one of the things that China is rich in and America is very dependent on China for. And one of the things the Trump administration want, and they're not wrong here, right? Just because I think you're being silly on a lot of things doesn't mean you're always wrong. And one of the things they're absolutely right on is that the world's dependence on China for rare earth elements was a mistake. That was short-sightedness. We should have had way more diverse supply chains for these things because they're so bloody important to our high-tech industries. Yeah, I think, you know, the Trump administration is completely correct to want rare earths in the United States. So this company, MP Materials, makes rare earth magnets, which are very important to Apple. There are a lot of magnets in Apple products. And Apple investing $500 million is impressive. But John Gruber pointed out that Apple were not the only big investor to show up to support MP Materials in July 2025. The US government bought a substantial stake in the company with a $400 million investment, which is less than Apple's, but not a lot. So I was kind of like, oh, that's curious. And I was really curious whether MP Materials was getting these rare earths from elsewhere in the world and refining them into magnets in the US or something. But no, they're digging the rare earths out of the ground in the United States, near Vegas, as it happens. So they're actually mining for these things in the United States. So that is a very interesting development. And I would say that that is a very good for America outcome of all of the tariff chaos. I mean, a lot of collateral damage to get to a good outcome, but here is one. Nice to have one somewhere. Also good from America's point of view, and again, this is one of those cases where the Trump administration are completely not wrong on this. They're also not first on this. The Biden administration had the CHIPS Act to try to encourage the manufacture of high-end chips in the United States. Having such a heavy dependence on a small island that is disputed off the Chinese coast, very much in the shadow of the giant Chinese Navy, be the only place making the best chips in the world, is a bloody big risk for the entire Western world. And as I say, the Biden administration made a start on addressing that with the CHIPS Act, and President Trump and his whole administration is very much leaning into that. And again, like with the rare earths, they're absolutely not wrong here. And that is also going well for America, which I think is probably good for the whole Western world. TSMC made a big splash when they broke ground on an additional American chip fab. I think it was in Arizona. The Secretary of Commerce was there. It was a really big deal. And TSMC made a little bit more of a splash this week by announcing that they have found a way to fast track that specific plant we watched them break ground on. And they are now saying they have their ducks in a row to open, quote, several quarters ahead of their initial promised schedule. So, interesting. And then, not unrelated, but somewhat different, is Apple doing its best. Well, okay, let me be cynical and then I'll be fair. The cynical take is, this is Apple playing politics, making it look like they're doing something. Apple are opening a manufacturing academy in Detroit to boost US innovation. That's the cynical take. I actually think there's more going on here, because Apple have wanted for a long time now, a very long time now, to get more stuff made in America. The final assembly has been the thing going on in China and now more Asian countries. But that's final assembly. Foxconn put the pieces together. So they make the iPhone, but they don't make the pieces for the iPhone, right? TSMC make the chips, there's different people making the displays, which is why we have an import problem on the horizon for the United States. Corning in the United States make the glass, that's also not Foxconn. And there's actually a lot of American parts get shipped to China or India or Vietnam or South Korea, get assembled into iPhones or and iPads and Macs and so forth, and then get shipped back. So the final assembly is the Foxconn thing, and everyone thinks that that is the making of an iPhone. But the rest of the supply chain is actually really important, and Apple have been working to get more and more and more of that into the United States for a decade or more now. And that's what this academy is about. It's about helping firms in America who make things that end up in iPhones somewhere have more of the bits coming from the United States. So then, is again, this is part of Apple's promised big spend on US manufacturing. Everything in that big promise was already in Apple's plans. They just dressed it up as a big promise. That's the cynical political bit. It's actually a really good idea. It's actually really good progress. And it was what Apple were planning to do all along. But it's certainly being given a little bit of extra pizzazz, or they're pointing at it a little bit more and putting extra sparkles on it, as an attempt to placate the Trump administration, which, if you're an intelligent CEO, seems like an awfully intelligent thing to do. Our second main story is not a story, but a cluster of stories united by the fact that they are all related to Apple's attempt to rejigger things in light of their very embarrassing failure to deliver their promised AI features. And they will tell us to try spin things that they delivered most of Apple Intelligence. Yeah, but the bit they didn't deliver is the most important bit, the flashiest bit, the bit they actually got the most praise for. So yeah, you delivered 90%. The thing is, the 10% you left out is the shiny bit. Okay, we've been there. Anyway, Apple are continuing to try to rejigger things and get back on track. So before I talk about the good stuff, or the interesting stuff, or the forward-looking stuff, let's just take a moment first off to note that Apple's failure to deliver on that promised Siri update has spawned yet another lawsuit. So there already is a proposed class action suit filed for investors, and now there's two. I can't imagine both cases will be allowed to proceed. you can't both be representing the same, or you're both trying to represent the same class. Only one of you is actually going to get class action status, right? I can't see how else that would work. I'm not a lawyer, certainly not in the US, but I'm not a lawyer anywhere. So I imagine those cases will end up folded together, or one of them will be chosen as the one to go forward. Either way, more lawyers lining up to sue Apple on behalf of investors for promising something and then not doing it. So that's just noted. It should also be noted, Apple did not have a great month in terms of talent retention in their AI area. Apple, let me just give you some headlines. So from the Mac Observer, Apple's AI chief behind Genmoji and Siri revamp joins Meta. That will be Roaming Pang. And we initially learned he was going to Meta, and that was already like, ooh, that's embarrassing for Apple. And then we learned that Meta really are serious about investing in AI, because Zuckerberg also released a big thing saying, hey, how serious he was about AI and how artificial personal superintelligence was the future, like the metaverse was. He didn't rename his company this time. Anyway, waffle, waffle, waffle. But he did promise to spend giant big wedges of cash to make it so. And we know where some of that cash went, because we found out a few days after learning about his departure that Pang took a nice little paycheck for that change. $200 million is his pay package with Meta, apparently. Okay. That was probably the biggest bit of news, but it wasn't the only bit of news. Meta also poached two more heavyweight engineers from Apple's AI team. That would be Mark Lee and Tom Gunner. So they weren't execs, they were engineers. But, well, you kind of need some Indians to go with the chiefs. Still wasn't it. As Cult of Mac put it, Apple AI brain drain continues as fourth researcher joins Meta. Now, that's an interesting bit of headlining there, because it's the fourth employee to join Meta, so that would be Bowen Zhang, and he is a researcher. So we've lost an exec, two engineers, and a researcher, all to Meta. It is a datum, and it is not a good one. Okay, so now let's get to the bigger breaking news. So Apple had a big earnings call. That was our main story number one. The day after the big earnings call, Apple held an all-hands meeting. And I didn't think they happened often, but actually it turns out they're quite rare. Apple do not hold regular all-hands. So the fact that they chose to have an all-hands to address mostly the AI stuff. There were a few other things talked about. It was an hour-long meeting. And everything we have is based on reports, of course, so that grain of salt goes everywhere in what I'm about to say. But the focus of it was Apple Intelligence and basically telling employees, sort of giving them an update on where we are and where we're going. We being Apple, since it was the Apple exec speaking. So, again, we're dealing with reports here, so it's all second-hand information. But it would appear pretty well reported out that Tim Cook made it clear that Apple can and must get AI right, and they are going to put their money where their mouth is, and they're going to invest big to make sure that bloody well happens. To rally the troops a little bit, Tim Cook made the point that Apple doesn't generally come first. Apple wasn't the first to deliver a personal computer, they weren't the first to deliver an MP3 player, they weren't the first to deliver a smartwatch, but what they do is deliver the best. And they need to do that again with AI. You're not wrong, Tim. I hope to goodness the stuff you're doing gets to that outcome. That's what I want. That's what you've done before. It will be great if you manage to pull the irons out of the fire and get us to there again. Most of the talking was Tim, but Craig did take the stage for a bit, and he put a little bit more sort of details on the looky back bit. Craig basically said, yeah, our first attempt at a better Siri failed because we messed up in terms of choosing the architecture. We tried to build a hybrid system because the LLM couldn't do Siri's old job properly. It's non-deterministic. That's not a good thing. Old Siri was deterministic. And we tried to make a hybrid system that would intelligently do old Siri or new Siri as needed, and it went terribly, horribly wrong. We've started over. We are working with a whole new architecture. It is going to be LLM only, and we're making it not fail. And he seems at this stage to be confident that they are on the right track and that they're making good progress, because he's reported to have basically said that they're on the right track, and he's also reported to have said that it looks like they're going to be able to deliver more than promised. No detail. Interesting for an exec who knows he's talking to every single Apple employee, and therefore the media will find out, to throw that little hint out there that Apple may be about to over-deliver. I am skeptical, given past performance in this area. But it's interesting to see Craig have the confidence to do that. We shall see. And something that I don't think gets nearly enough credit from a lot of media outlets is how, while Apple's AI products have fallen short, Apple's AI research has been cutting edge all along. It's been a failure to translate good research into nice products. The good research is continuing. Apple released a technical report in the open, linked in the show notes, to the PDF is full thing, basically describing where they are now in terms of their AI efforts. And I'll give you the Apple Insider headline, and also the link in the show notes has the Apple Insider article, which gives a nice summary of what's in the report. But basically the headline: Apple insists this AI training is ethical and respects publishers, and they put a bit of meat behind that, and that is the most important thing in the report. But in just July, Apple published 8 research papers. That's impressive. Again, best summary from Apple Insider. I've been citing Apple Insider a lot, haven't I? They seem to write the best headlines, short, to the point. Apple researchers take aim at hallucinations and true conversations. 8 different research papers dealing with that broad theme, but Apple seem pretty focused on getting the AI not to spoof ya, and to be honest, when it's talking to you. So these are things we want from improved Siri. So please, yes, good to see. Our third main story then is Apple finally deliver on a long rumored product, a subscription-based support package. So if you're the kind of person who has an Apple device, then AppleCare Plus is fine. It makes perfect sense. You just buy your AppleCare Plus and you're away on your one Apple device. But when you're someone like me, who has, leaving aside work devices, because they're not on my Apple ID, they're on my managed Apple ID, they're unrelated, right? So only with me personal hat on, I have my Mac Studio, my MacBook Pro, my iPhone, my iPad, my Apple Watch, my AirPods. I have a lot of Apple products, and I buy AppleCare Plus on them all because I want to know how long these devices are going to live, and I want to know that if they stop living during that time frame, it's Apple's problem, not mine. And I budget for them on that basis. I budget for my Macs on the basis that they're covered by whatever length of time it is AppleCare Plus gives you, and if they last longer, yay. But if one of my Macs outside of AppleCare Plus dies, it gets replaced, because I've already budgeted for that, because I'm budgeting to replace them on cycle with their AppleCare Plus, and I do the same. Well, phones tend to get replaced more quickly because there's a nice interest in hand-me-down phones in our family, which gives me an excuse to buy shinier phones. And the watches generally outlive their AppleCare Plus, and I'm perfectly happy to, unless Apple do something spectacular, or unless the watch dies, in which case I have no qualms about replacing it the moment it dies, because if it lived longer than AppleCare Plus, well, it did good, didn't it? Anyway, long way of saying, I have a lot of AppleCare Plus and a lot of products. It would be really nice to consolidate that spending into a monthly fee, like I consolidate all of the Apple services I consume into a single monthly family plan for Apple One. So that is what is being addressed here with AppleCare One. It is starting off United States only, which gets a giant big sad face from me because, as you might have guessed, I would quite like this, please, yes, but not yet. So, one assumes this is getting it bedded in the United States before rolling it out more broadly. Fingers crossed. You folks are basically beta testing it for us. Okay. So what's happening in the United States? Well, it is a $19.99 per month package for up to 3 devices with the option to add additional devices for an extra $5.99 a month. The bundles are both, so the plan bundles together both support and protection. So that's theft and loss protection. They come together in this bundle. So we'll fix it if it breaks and we'll replace it if it gets nicked or you break it. Devices can be swapped in and out with new devices, basically as you want. You have X amount in your plan, you can swap devices in and out because every device is priced the same. So you pay for 5 devices or 4 devices or 3 devices. You pay for an amount of devices, and if that's 3 iPhones or 3 Macs, doesn't matter. Mix and match as you will. You just simple per device fee. I love the simplicity here. If you do a trade-in through Apple, so if you get a new Apple device by upgrading through Apple, as in you do a trade-in on a new thing, it'll automatically swap the old, it'll automatically unenroll the old device from your support plan and enroll the new one into your support plan, so you won't have to worry about doing that yourself. Older devices can be added in for up to 4 years after purchase. That is impressive. If you already have AppleCare Plus, as I do on everything, if you choose to switch to the subscription model, the money, the big upfront fee you paid for that AppleCare Plus isn't wasted. You get it, but you get a refund of it through Apple gift cards. If you're the kind of person who has enough devices to want a subscription plan and you're the kind of person who already bought AppleCare Plus upfront, you're probably the kind of person who spends money with Apple regularly. So a gift card is just fine. Yeah, absolutely. I would, if it were offered in Ireland, yoink. And I would be getting a nice gift card. If you are wondering, well, is this compatible with Apple's upgrade program? The short answer is, it is. The longer answer is, not for this show. We'll link in show notes to more details from Apple Insider. But basically, there's a little bit of faffing about, but yes, you can. So that was all AppleCare 1. And I very nearly got confused and didn't realize that there was also a change to plain old AppleCare Plus. You can now get loss and theft protection on iPads and Apple Watches, which you couldn't get before. And the reason is because Apple needed to be able to cover those devices as part of AppleCare 1 anyway. So AppleCare 1 gives you loss and damage on all devices, and they let you enroll iPads and Apple Watches, so they kind of needed to start doing damage and theft on those devices. So they have, and they've rolled it out to just AppleCare Plus in general. So that's, yay, a little bit of something at least for everyone else. So I think this is a great offering from Apple. Now, if they could round out the package with their long-rumored hardware subscription option, then I'd be able to take all of my very bursty Apple bills and just stick them all into a nice, steady, easier to budget for monthly payment. That would make my life so much easier in terms of accounting than having to always make sure there's enough money around to replace a Mac Studio as and when it dies. They're not cheap. So anyway, I think this is excellent progress. I'm cranky it's US only for now, but I do understand that's how these things start and then they roll out more broadly. Fingers crossed it goes well and it rolls out more broadly quickly. Let us wrap up the show with a few other quick stories that made the news in July 2025. There were a few small tweaks for developers and their relationship with the App Store. It's a give and take. Developers have some homework in preparation for Apple's 26 series OSs and their enhanced parental controls. Developers now have to start providing age rating details in their app submissions. That's the give. In terms of the take, Apple developers now have a new option. You can configure the App Store to offer special offers to people if they click the button to cancel their subscription. So if you have a subscription-based app and a user is about to cancel, you can now do that thing that every ISP in the world seems to do, where instead of just cancelling for you, they say, let me transfer you to our retention department, and they try to talk you into staying by giving you a really great deal, and you're thinking, geez, I should have threatened to leave years ago. Well, apparently developers now have the option to offer some sort of an incentive to stay. when someone starts the unsubscribe workflow. Again, no need to talk to anyone. It'll just be, here's an offer. Maybe you want to say if we do this. Okay, no, you don't. Fine, unsubscribe, toodlepip. So, yeah, I think it's no harm. Apple also celebrated World Emoji Day with the early release of their emoji game. This is something that they had previewed during WWDC. And we weren't expecting to see it on the 26 series OSs, but on World Emoji Day, the game dropped. So, yay. Thanks, Apple. Kind of fun way to celebrate World Emoji Day. I don't normally talk about every new online Apple store that opens up. But, you know, at this age, most countries have one anyway. But a notable absence from the suite of online stores were stores in Arabic. None of the countries where Arabic is the spoken language had a store because Apple haven't been translating the stuff into Arabic. Well, they now have their first Arabic store for Saudi Arabia. One assumes this will be followed by stores for neighboring countries soon, since the hard work was getting, you know, an Arabic version of the store ready. Now that they have one, I imagine they can duplicate that effort and get more value from it. Finally, we talked last month about some of Apple's back-to-school offers. Well, they weren't finished offering. The EU back-to-school offers were announced during July. Free AirPods and upgrades and a few other bits and bobs. Details in the show notes from the Mac Observer. That wraps up our coverage of the July 2025 news in Apple's universe. I don't know if you've noticed that this month's news, like last month's, was a little bit more, shall we say, frank than I used to do, say, a year ago on the show. Last month I was mentally quite drained as I was doing the show, and it really takes a lot of effort for me to completely suppress my personal opinions and views. And last month I kind of did. I did it less. I let my shields down a bit, and I decided, given the times we're in, to continue to do my absolute darndest to be fair, but to introduce some additional frankness to complement the fairness. I don't do hot takes. I hope it comes across that I put a lot of time and effort into arriving at my opinions. They really, really are not hot takes. They are considered. I do a lot of reading. I do a lot of listening to experts. I think about these things deeply. If I don't understand, say, the mechanics of international trade, I learn from economics experts. I really do try to be informed, and I try to form honest and fair opinions. But I do also come to this as a human being with my own genuine personal opinions. And like I say, I'm just going to be more frank. And last month was the first show I let myself be frank. And I was very curious whether A, anyone would notice, and B, if people did notice, whether they would be cranky or not. Turns out the answer is or not. I received quite a bit of feedback, so yeah, people noticed, and that feedback was universally positive. People said things like, I enjoyed your saltier take, and it's nice to hear you be a little bit more frank, or it's nice to hear you be a little, you know, share your honest views a little bit more. So I'm going to keep to what I think is a reasonable balance between my continued attempts to always be fair and a renewed embrace of frankness. So think of this show as my considered but honest opinions about Apple's news. Sometimes your considered and honest opinions will differ greatly from mine. I don't know if you're wrong. I just haven't arrived at your conclusion. I don't think you're a bad person for having arrived at a different conclusion, and I hope you will give me the same grace and not assume that I'm some sort of evil person because I don't think of the world the way you do. As I say, I'm open to more feedback. This is a departure. We're living in interesting times, and I'm doing my best to adapt how I do this show, given the fact that the universe in which I am doing this show is so different to what it was when I started this show all those years ago. If you'd like to steer me on that, I will consider all constructive and genuine feedback. I don't inflict thoughtless hot takes on you. Please don't inflict thoughtless hot takes on me, because they will bounce off. They just bounce clean off. Bing! I don't have the mental energy for dealing with unconsidered hot takes. I do, however, want genuine and honest opinions, and I do value them. So bear that in mind when sharing feedback. Okay, with all of that said, one of the reasons I can be frank and honest in what I say is because I don't have any sponsors. I don't have any advertisers. So I don't have to temper my views with, oh no, will that make my advertisers cranky? And the reason I don't have to do that is because you folks out there are amazing, and you have made this a 100% listener-supported show. And that is such a luxury, and I appreciate it oh so very much. I also know that we're living in difficult times, so if you were once a supporter and have had to stop supporting, please don't think I think any less of you. I thank you greatly for your past support when you could, and I humbly hope you will resume support when you can again. But no one should feel under any pressure whatsoever to support this show. There are rather more important things in this universe. But to all of you who do continue to support, thank you, thank you, thank you. I've been your host, Bart Bouchatz. You can find detailed show notes and buttons to support the show at letstalk.ie. Until next month, happy computing.